Welcome to the Talking About Horses podcast with Di Denton, where we talk about all things horses. From interviews with leading horse people and industry experts, to useful and usable ideas, resources and discussions, we're talking about horses. Today's Talking About Horses episode is brought to you by Muddy Creek Rain Gear, the riding rain gear that really works. Whether it's long, short or high-vis rain gear that you're after, there'll be something to keep you dry and comfortable in any range of weathers in the Muddy Creek Rain Gear range. Check it out at www.muddycreekraingear.com.au. So, if you're ready, let's get going. Another interesting episode awaits. Hi, I'm here with Georgia Higgins, the brand and media coordinator for the World Polo Championship that's being held in Sydney this year. How are you?
I'm good, Dan. How are you?
Good, thanks. Thanks for talking to us today. Tell me about the polo championships. I don't know anything about polo, let alone polo championships.
Well, I'll start from the basics. A game is four people aside, and you end up with between six and ten horses per player. So it's quite horse intensive because the horses give their full effort for a very short amount of time, in the same way that a racehorse would. So the horses are changed over. Our periods of play are called chuckers.
Yep.
And the horses are changed over once or twice a chucker.
So how long does a chucker go?
7.5 minutes.
Okay.
So it's quite precise. And then what happens is you have a game which will end up being 1.5 to 2 hours, depending on things like fouls, and they stop the clock for those. So we've got the World Polo Championship coming to Sydney October this year, and we'll end up with 14 games from the top eight nations that have gone through zone qualifiers all around the world to be able to qualify to come to Australia. So currently we have Argentina, New Zealand, Chile, who have all qualified, and Australia is the host nation, which is fantastic. The last four teams, the qualifying rounds, are still going on, so we won't know those. The final team will find out on the 6th of July.
Wow, and so when are these being held?
A championship itself's in October from the 21st to the 29th.
Right.
And it's pretty incredible because what it is, it's a whole festival, a celebration of all things Australian and equine. So there will be a 10-day festival, essentially, of a whole range of activities with an equine entertainment area, which will have jousting and show jumping, dressage, rodeo, as well as having the polo that will be going on, and there will be a full festival with lots of children's entertainment, bubble soccer, picnic areas, market stalls for artisans and local producers and
wow.
suppliers.
And that's being held out here in the Richmond?
At the Sydney Polo Club.
Which is where?
It's in Richmond Lowlands.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that just sounds fascinating. All things horse and everything arty in between.
It's pretty incredible. It's comes under the Olympic banner, and so it's a very prestigious event from a horse and polo perspective. It you go through a full qualifying and bidding process the same way you would to be able to bid for the Olympics.
So that's the Olympic connection?
Yes.
Okay.
And because Olympics, polo is no longer played at the Olympics. It was, but the last time it was 1936.
I was going to say, I've never heard of it at the Olympics.
But so the Federation of International Polo now oversees it on behalf of the Olympic Committee.
Okay. And I see that you're linked up here with Destination New South Wales Tourism and New South Wales Government, that sort of
thing.
Yeah,
they're our major strategic partners, so they were really invested.
They were big time.
Right from the beginning, because this area here, specifically the Hawkesbury, is actually incredibly untapped when it comes to tourism and travel. There's so many assets here and so many things for families to do, for people to do, who they may live here the whole time, their whole lives, and never realise that there's polo 10 minutes from their door or down the street, let alone a whole range of other activities that happen in the district. So we're working with them to get people from overseas and interstate to come to not only Sydney, but the Hawkesbury, specifically Richmond.
Okay. So tell me about polo. As someone who
seen it played on TV and heard bits and pieces about it through horse magazines, but I've never actually come in contact with it. So we've talked about the 7.5 minute chuckers and the strings of polo ponies.
Yep.
How does someone get into polo, and how does it differ from polo cross?
It's a very good question. A lot of people get into it through polo cross.
Right.
Polo cross can work as a bit of a feeder. They are different sports, in as much as the field size is different, the requirements of horses are different in terms of how many you need, as well as the type of actual equipment. Polo uses a mallet, whereas polo cross uses what's more like a lacrosse kind of stick.
They scoop.
Yeah. Whereas polo, you hit the ball, and the ball's quite different, but they are variations of a very similar sport. A polo field is about the size of 9 soccer fields, so it's quite large, whereas a polo cross field is considerably smaller, and the team sizes are smaller. So you can enter polo cross having lesser number of horses because they don't tire as easily. But a lot of people will get into polo through seeing it, through friends playing, or just wanting to try something different. It's quite interesting that people think it's quite prohibitive, the number of horses that you needed, particularly people like show jumpers and dressage riders whose horses are worth 6 figures, and they think, I couldn't possibly have 6 of those. Well, a lot of polo horses are nowhere near that much. An entry-level horse, you could be looking at $8,000 or $10,000.
Okay. And so, is there a particular type of horse? Like, when I think of polo horses, polo cross as well, I'm thinking, what comes to mind? Australian stock horses, that sort of wiry, tough, on a dime?
Yeah,
rather than close.
They're thoroughbreds. Majority of them are thoroughbreds.
What, a smaller thoroughbred?
Yes, 15-2 is about the size of a polo horse.
Right.
And then any variation on that is personal preference, really.
Okay.
And to say what is the stock standard polo horse differs a bit on what position you play, what type of rider you are, your strengths, your skills. I myself like my horses quite agile and quite fast and small, whereas someone else who might weigh a lot more might need a more sturdy horse.
Okay.
So there's no cut and dry of what a polo horse is in those variations, but it's all kind of about 15-2, thoroughbred, very agile. And I think for most polo people, it's about a horse that actually wants to be there. If they don't love the sport and they don't love what they're doing, then they won't want to participate. And for everyone at the end of the day, it's a fun thing, something they love and they want to be part of it. If their horses don't want to be part of it, then they're not going to be a good polo horse.
Okay. And you play yourself?
I do play.
Yeah? How long have you been playing, and how did you get into it?
My family plays, which is one of the main ways that people get into it as well, is they come from a history of polo players or off the land.
Yep.
So my parents both play, and they only took it up in their adulthood. So they were one of the newbies to the sport. And we've growing up with polo horses, you can't not ride polo horses. Quite funnily, I had a trainer who wanted me to try a bit of show jumping, and my parents said, no, Georgia, it's just too dangerous. considering they've had pretty serious polo accidents, it's a lot of people find humour in that, as do I, but they absolutely, we all love it, and we breed polo horses at the Sydney Polo Club.
Yeah.
And I love the sport so much, I started the first Australian University Polo Club and took their team internationally. We competed against Princeton, Cornell, a couple of other really big universities.
Yeah,
which is incredible.
And what were you studying at Sydney Uni?
My undergraduate was linguistics.
Wow.
Yeah.
Multi-talented.
Oh,
multilingual.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. So, but you can't, if you grow up with horses in your blood, you can't leave them.
No, you can't, can you?
No. Absolutely not. So, polo is something that we're all very passionate about as a family, and the polo community as well. It's very much a community.
Right.
It's only about 800 registered players in Australia.
In Australia?
Yeah. But we are one of... There's about 22,000 registered players around the world.
Yeah. So how many clubs are there in Australia?
I can't give you a very accurate answer, no, right. But it's probably maybe 40.
And in New South Wales?
The majority of them are in New South Wales.
Yeah.
And half of them are in the Hawkesbury.
Right.
So the Hawkesbury has the largest area of...
catchment area, I suppose.
Yeah, the largest catchment area. And that's just because a lot of the polo fields are there. There's 16 polo fields.
The facilities are here so you can do it.
Yeah. Yes. And like attracts like. So people come and learn here and they get really invested in the area and a lot of people will move and it's a very easy commute to live, right. to be in Richmond and work in the city or wherever
right.
you are.
Okay. So how did the... It's the Richmond Polo Club.
Sydney Polo
Sorry,
Club.
Sorry, Sydney Polo Club. How did Sydney Polo Club get to be to the point of going, yes, we'll put our hand up to run this huge event?
Yeah.
Because this is big time.
It is big time. Well, the Sydney Polo Club's the oldest club in the Southern Hemisphere, so there's a pretty long history there. And it's been something... Last time and the only time the World Championship was hosted in Australia before this year was 2001 down in Werribee.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Higgins... went down and saw it and said, hey, this is something that is the president of Sydney Polo Club. He said, this is something that we could do. We just have to get the fields right and all of those types of infrastructure things. So then about 14 years later, went into partnership with Destination New South Wales. And between that, obviously, there was lots of discussions of how to make it best happen. And then we went to Argentina to present the bid. And we went up against a couple of other countries and almost unanimously it was awarded to Sydney Polo Club.
Oh, that's just so exciting.
It's quite an unusual process. Normally it's awarded to a country and then the country awarded out to a club. However, the Sydney Polo Club was specifically invited to place a bid.
Wow, even more
facilities. Yeah, the facilities are fantastic.
Yeah. And how many fields have you got out of the club?
We've got five.
Five fields on how big an area of land?
Just over 400 acres.
Wow. And has it always been that large?
The Sydney Polo Club has moved around place to place over the since the mid-1800s.
When was it established?
1870, I would say, off the top of my head. And Banjo Patterson, the poet, was one of the founding members, and it has a very long history.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's been an amalgamation of titles to get the actual club, but very luckily it's very fertile soil. It was originally one of the dairies in the area, Moxie's Dairy. Most people know it by, and often we'll say Sydney Polo Club, and they'll say, oh, Moxie's Dairy. Yes, that one.
That sounds nearly so glamorous,
no,
does it?
No. And it's not glamorous. Polo... A lot of people think that polo is glamorous and horse people get it, that it's actually not. It's a grassroots sport. It's about families getting their kids in from knee-high as soon as you can ride a horse to be able to put a mallet in their hands and everyone spends their whole weekend grubby and covered in dirt.
That's horses.
It's horses.
It is. But when you see polo played and it's the Royals playing it and they show the glamorous side of it on the media with the champagne and the glass. Well, that's right. And I'm looking at photos here of the promotional posters and that's what it's selling there too, all very glamorous and seafood and champagne. But, yes.
And that's a point of difference we're really trying to push with this event. It's not exhibition polo. It's really highly competitive polo and it's grassroots family friendly. So we want people to come with their children and not only see the polo but see all the other activities that are going on. And we're working with a whole range of educational institutions and the Royal Agricultural Society to bring Australian agricultural education to the masses.
So how will you do that? What does that mean?
We're doing that through displays and the programming where we will have lots of educational things of sheep shearing and feeding programs and a lot of in a similar way that the Royal Agricultural Show do, and that's why we've teamed up with them is to continue that education with people who aren't exposed to animals all the time.
And so it sounds to me you're trying to bring like the intrinsic Australian culture.
Yes, which, that's exactly what it is,
which as you say so many people only get to go to like Sydney Royal Easter Show and see lambs and things like that.
And it's once a year. And also to go with that, and it's something that they say at the show or about the show themselves, is they have all these beautiful animals, but they come in, they don't live there, and it's all on concrete. It's not a farming facility.
Yeah.
So the Sydney Polo Club is also a farming facility. We breed polo horses, but also cattle.
Okay, what sort of cattle? So,
both Angus and Wagyu.
Okay.
Look, the land isn't huge, so we can't do a lot of mass production, so high quality Wagyu is the easiest, kind of best way to the farming practices.
So do you use that as a as another income stream, if you like? Are you doing it as holistic pasture management with the rotations and things like that?
Yeah.
Or are you bringing that in as well?
There's both aspects to it. There is the income stream aspect of it, and there is some pasture management. It kind of works hand in hand with the fact that it's always been a dairy. The property is very well set up, or aspects of the property are very well set up for cattle. So it works really well, and we have a really great team who want to focus on being able to keep agriculture in this area. We don't want it to become fully fully urbanised and housing everywhere.
That's a challenge.
It is a challenge.
Driving in here today was like, wow, it's all getting built.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And seeing the progress, we've been coming here as a family before we invested in the area, moved here full time, coming out for 25 years on weekends. Before there was a freeway and it would take 3 hours each way. So now to take 45 minutes and it's all just houses until you open up onto that last little bit of grass is a big difference.
Right. Okay, so a typical polo competition day. What is that? Tell me about that.
There's a lot of, as with all horses, there's a lot of preparation. So you have to prepare.
Do polo ponies, they'd have to be super fit?
Yes, incredibly
any
fit.
Any top competition, whether it's endurance or show jumping or dressage, and that, the fitness, they have to be spot on and sound.
They do. And if they're not fit, they're going to injure themselves, and nobody wants that.
Yep.
So the fitness regime for horses can be quite intense, depending on what level they're playing at. But let's just talk top level.
Yep.
We're talking multiple training sessions a day.
A day.
Two's kind of where it sits, a morning training and an afternoon training. So that might be both cardio, or it could potentially be a cardio in the morning and skills in the afternoon, depending on the individual horse and what its needs are. So then when you come to competition day, they're obviously all brought in the morning, have their breakfast, then they're all brushed down, looking beautiful. They'll be trucked wherever they need to go. They'll be tacked up. As you can imagine, it's not just tacking one horse, but for a whole team, you're looking at a couple of dozen horses. So you have a couple of grooms. Each player will have a groom themselves, or possibly two grooms, who will look after all the horses. And
Does that groom incorporate the mother, father, husband, friend?
No. The top level, they're trained professionals, they're career grooms. This is what they do, they're polo grooms. So, but at the bottom level, it's all hands on deck. It's the same as it is for any kind of equestrian grassroots. Everyone's gets roped in to do bandages and
hold a horse here, or pick up that foot, or carry that gear. Yeah.
Exactly. It's a bit different in terms of beautification of the horse. Sitting around here today at Equifest, you see a lot of horses who have had hours of grooming, washing, feet being polished, whereas that level doesn't really go. And it is unfortunate, but it doesn't happen in polo to the same kind of degree. The horses still look beautiful, but it's naturally beautiful, and it's because there are so many horses for each groom. And then there's a lot of tack. They don't have manes. Polo horses don't have manes at all.
Why is that?
It's a safety thing.
Just so it doesn't get tangled in.
Yeah, because you have polo mallet in one hand, reins in the other, whip as well, and there's the potential that a mane could get caught in the mallet. So not only does the mallet go backward and forward, it can go under the neck to do a neck shot. And if you could imagine a mane going and a neck shot, potential for the mane to get caught around the mallet's head. Because it's a bamboo cane, it bends quite a lot. So it can come right up and around the horse's neck, not actually touching the horse. But so you can imagine that would not only hurt the horse, but potentially break a player's wrist. So there's a few things there, and they do have tails, but all the tails are plaited and tied up. So it's very interesting for me to sit here watching all the dressage, and they've got beautiful tails. I'm going, plait that tail, plait that tail.
So why are they plaited up?
Again, it's the same, safety. Everything in polo comes back to safety. Every rule, every condition, everything is all about the safety of the horse or the player. There will never be anything that's for beauty, for the spectator. It's all about safety.
Right. Is there any specific gear that you particularly ride in? Like, is there a polo saddle or bridle or helmets?
Yeah, so polo has all its own tack. There's polo-specific saddles. Some people may ride in a more Western saddle or a combination of both, depending on their skills. Top level polo saddles, a lot of the best ones are designed and made in Argentina. They're very skilled, so... And
how do they differ, though, to, say, a standard Australian stock saddle or a standard English dressage saddle?
They're closer to a dressage saddle.
Have they got more forward flaps, or are they a shorter flap?
Some of it comes down to preference. They are very flat, don't have... they're very streamlined. Anything that's not necessary is not on the saddle. So a lot of the holding in and staying on is the rider's skill and muscle.
So there's no knee rolls in them?
No knee rolls, like nothing. Right. Absolutely nothing. So it's all about, it's all down to the rider to stay on. And a lot of that, again, is safety, because one of the plays in polo is taking your opponent out of the play, and you do that by riding them off. You come up shoulder to shoulder and you push them out of the way.
Okay.
And so you have the streamlined flat saddles so that nothing's going to get caught or push into another horse or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So then there's quite a bit of... All the bit depends on whatever horse you use. A lot of people don't like spurs.
Is there any sort of bit that you're not allowed to use, or any gear you're not allowed to use?
No, not really.
Yeah.
Spurs are frowned upon.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of rules about whips and things like that, but it's not that you can't use them specifically. You'll look at a polo horse and say, wow, that horse has got a lot of gear on it, breastplates and
a lot of them wear head checks, don't they?
Head checks, yeah. Overgirths, everything. And it's all safety, safety, safety.
Right. What are the head checks' purpose in polo?
A lot of it... Can you see a photo? Those ones there.
Yeah.
Because
it's not a running martingale, it's a head check. Isn't
yeah,
it
yeah. is. Keep it on. I don't know. I don't really know specifically.
Right.
It is,
okay.
But it is in the rules.
You see a lot of it.
Yeah.
But they're also all bandaged up to protect their legs and things.
Bandages and boots.
And boots, yeah.
A new rule came in at the end of last year. Bandages are the first thing off and the last thing that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, that's all about the safety of the horse. And bandages are really important for tendons, because they could get a ball in the leg, or they could get a mallet in the leg. And so a lot of people will wear boots as well, tendon boots.
Okay. All right.
On top of bandages.
So... To anybody out there that's thinking, geez, I wouldn't mind having a crack at this polo.
Yeah.
This looks a bit of fun. How would they go about doing that? You know?
If you are in the local... Well, the best way of doing it is call your local polo club.
Yep.
And they will tell you where you can learn. A lot of the polo clubs have coaches, or there's a list of recognised Australian coaches.
Mm-hmm.
If you go onto the Australian Polo Federation's website...
Yeah,
that will be able to tell you where your closest club is.
Could you just Google, like, New South Wales polo clubs?
Yeah.
And something would come up?
Yeah. Because each state then has their own associations and things like that. So I think a Google will tell you.
What would we do without Google?
If you are really stuck and you want to ask someone, we have a contact us section on our website, wpcsydney.com, and we're happy to field those types of inquiries, because one of our objectives of the World Championship is actually getting encouraging people to take up this fantastic adrenaline sport.
Right. So how many, tell me again, how many teams you think you'll get here? Well, you will get
we
here
will,
for?
There'll be eight.
Eight teams eight from teams. Eight different countries.
Yes.
Wow.
So the zones that are, we've got the North American zone still to qualify, the European zone where two countries come from instead of one, and then there's the kind of other zone. So we've already done the Australasia zone, mm-hmm. and from that New Zealand qualified. It was a tough final between Malaysia and New Zealand.
Malaysia?
Yes.
How interesting.
Well, you get some, with polo, it's quite diverse. You don't, there are teams that you wouldn't expect to be incredibly good at it who are. And it's just something they put their resources into.
Okay.
New Zealand are very, very good. And they have a very high ratio per capita of the best players in the world. So a lot of people don't expect that. And so it's always tough for an Australia versus New Zealand match. Fingers crossed for Australia, but New Zealand are always really good.
Bit of the All Blacks with football, is it? Like that?
It is exactly. And, you know, a little quirky fact, one of the guys on the New Zealand team, Guy Higginson, his father was actually a rugby All Black. So
there you go.
It's in their blood.
Tough buggers.
Yeah, they are tough. Buggers. They're very, very tough. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So, you've been riding polo since you were a little packer?
Yeah.
Yep. Your mum and dad were in it. Your mum and dad's still involved?
Yeah. Mum doesn't play so much anymore. She had, as everyone always has, an accident and confidence goes.
Yep.
And so she's still very involved, but not riding as much as she used to. And my sister's got a daughter, and so the next generation's coming through. And she was watching today of the smaller horses and the Shetlands, and she goes, oh, I just want a Shetland. And she's three. And we're going, oh, no.
I guess it was never going to be anything different.
No. It's really not. And look, our horses, although polo horses aren't that big, they're too big for a three-year-old.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So what are you riding at the moment?
I've got my string of horses. Mm-hmm. String is what you call, obviously, a group of polo horses. And got a really beautiful string, which have taken quite some time to come together.
Yes.
And I'm really happy with how they've come together, because I've got a few in there that we've bred ourselves. So the joy that comes out of being able to get a polo horse to that stage, because they take so many years that they're kind of at their peak from 8 years old onwards.
Okay.
So
what's the life would you expect if that horse is at its peak at eight? Are you looking, you know, all things being equal and yep. right, that it'll go till 15, 20 as a polo horse?
You can, one of my long time standing horses, I've just recently retired her, and she's 23.
Right.
So, and that is because she had the passion for it.
Yep.
And she would go and you'll get horses on the side of the field who are standing there waiting their turn and stamping their feet, because they want to be out there and they're not. Their friends are out there and they're all going, and it's action and adrenaline, and they're stamping and pawing at the ground. So 23, I just retired her, and she's got a mane now for the first time, and it's got plaits.
Wow.
So she's got a beautiful little girl who's riding her now as a little right about.
Fantastic. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's just been fascinating. I've really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you so much, George.
Thank you for giving me the time.
That's a pleasure. And I look forward to coming down to the championships and seeing you again there. Will you be riding?
I won't be. I won't be competing. We will know the Australian team later in the year, which will be very exciting.
Yeah, right.
So we'll keep our fingers crossed to see who makes the team, but it's very competitive at the moment.
Yep.
Yes, it is.
Oh, well, it'll be a big kudos to be playing at home in your own country.
Yes.
Wow. on your own horses. Do the other teams bring their own horses in?
No, they don't.
So we have to supply them as well.
We're supplying them. So part of the bid process is being able to confirm that you can supply most 300 of the best horses.
300?
And
it's
a big ask because
that
you go around and not only... Well, you have to ask all the people of the polo community to lovingly lend their horses.
Yeah.
So it's a big ask from the whole community.
I always think that with the Olympics, when the Sydney Olympics came here with the horses, like you're asking people to give their pride and joy that they've got to this, and I imagine a lot of them went off with strappers with their horses as well, but even still, you're entrusting somebody else with your pride and joy to keep it sound and do the right thing. I don't know that I could do that myself with my own horses.
And that's something that we have been dealing with, and we have a really good program in place to make sure that every horse is well cared for, and Sydney Uni Veterinary Hospital is one of our key partners, and got a program with all their students that we allocate students to horses to watch out for welfare, and we have equine welfare officers that are being brought in from all around the world to make sure that everybody treats these horses as if they were their own. And it is very commonplace in polo that you travel internationally and you get on a horse you've never seen before in your life. So that, from the rider's perspective, it's not that unusual, but to go around and say to people, please, can you lend us your horse? It's a big ask.
It's a big call.
And part of the program is to give back to the polo clubs, and there's donations for each horse made back to the polo clubs to help them keep running. Like I said, it's a grassroots sport, so a lot of those, like a pony club, or everybody fundraises to keep their club going.
Yeah. I just think it's such a huge... It's a real leap of faith and credit to the people that do lend their horses.
It is. Yeah. And we've got incredible insurance. And not that insurance can fix everything at the end of the day, but... If it's an injury, there's that little bit more peace of mind that it'll help those horses get better.
Well, all kudos to the people donating the horses for the time, and for you guys and the club for taking on this mammoth but so exciting prospect for these championships, because, you know, this is big time.
It is big time.
Yeah.
It is big time. And seeing everyone come down and experience polo will be a real joy for us at the club.
So
well.
It's... October. 10 days, October this year at Sydney, in the Hawkesbury Valley in Sydney.
Yes.
There's lots of accommodation down here this way, and Hawkesbury's the centre of everything horse in Sydney pretty much, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
And to find out more information, the website's wpcsydney.com, and there's everything you possibly need to know. And if there's not, our phone number's on there, and we'll always be the other end of the line to take any questions.
Thanks so much. It's been lovely talking to you today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Talking About Horses podcast today. This podcast has been brought to you by Muddy Creek Rain Gear. Rain gear for people who love to ride no matter what the weather. If you've enjoyed this podcast, I'd love it if you were to subscribe, share it with your friends, and leave a review on iTunes. If you'd like to find out more about today's conversation topic or continue the conversation, then simply head over to the Talking About Horses podcast page on the Muddy Creek Rain Gear website at www.muddycreekraingear.com.au/news, where you can also check out their great range of wet weather gear. Thanks for listening. I'll be talking about horses again soon.